This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, exploring a little different kind of story today than we typically do. George W. Dubois was determined to serve his country however he could. In fact, when his father died only a few months after he was drafted, he could have come back to run the family farm and enjoy veteran status. He said no. He really wanted to go meet the enemy. But as we've heard, Uncle Sam kept changing the story on him. When we left off, he was discussing his duties supervising about 1,400 German prisoners of war after World War II was over. You were overseeing two different camps in Munich and Straubing, but there was another kind of camp around there and several other spots throughout Germany. Concentration camps where Jews and other political prisoners, too, were tortured and murdered. Did you visit any of those spots where those horrific things had occurred?
Yes, I went through Dachau, which was not too far from Munich. They had it all arranged, all set up there with the dummies and whatnot, you could see, and the ovens and the gas chambers and the whole shot. Yeah, I saw all that kind of stuff. And I guess a lot of the civilians felt pretty guilty because, gosh, they knew what was going on. They said, oh, we didn't know, but you knew they did. But Munich at that time was a pile of rubble. Gee whiz, the Air Corps had just decimated that whole city. And we just had little trails in between you could drive a cheap run. But the place was a real wreck.
And just being there at Dachau, even that long after it had been liberated and so much had been cleaned up, just to see and understand what had happened there, what did that do to you emotionally? I mean, did you feel a burden or a weight just being in that place and understanding what had happened?
Well, yeah, you can't understand how people could be that basic and that cruel. But human nature, I guess, basically is ugly. And you give a certain situations and human nature will react in bad ways. Look at the Japanese, same way, and the Chinese and all. So it's just human nature. And if conditions are right, the old ugly human nature head will raise up.
A lot of people learned about the details of some of that when the Nuremberg trials occurred. And I understand you actually got to witness a piece of that?
Yeah, I had to leave there and I went to Denmark. And on the way, I stopped off and went going through Nuremberg. And so I sat up in the stands there and witnessed some of the Nuremberg trials. And it was nice there. They had earphones, and you could just dial in whatever language you wanted. And you could see all these big German big shots were all in a row down there, and they were on trial. And so it was quite impressive. So at least I got to see what was going on and see that they got their just desserts anyway. So that was a kind of a satisfaction.
I wonder, too, if in your time over there, because you mentioned, you know, so many of the guys you trained with went overseas. So many of the guys that you trained while you were an instructor probably made it overseas. And I think about the places where the 17th and the 82nd and the 101st served in Europe. Some pretty hairy situations, some pretty bloody battles, including the Battle of the Bulge. Did you have some perspective being there afterwards that said, boy, maybe it's a good thing I didn't get here earlier?
Well, yeah, because when we went into Le Havre there, I got to kind of explore around there. And we see the big pillboxes with the German guns, and you look out there and see where these poor guys had to come up on the beach and all that kind of stuff. And somehow, being just a young guy, I wanted to be a part of it. And I always felt bad that I was never a part of it. No matter what I did, I couldn't get any combat action. And so I always felt just a little guilty about that. However, I have to be grateful that I'm still alive.
You know, I've talked to some other people who spent some time, or like your case, all their time in the States while the war was going on. And, you know, if you trained however many paratroopers and something you helped them understand, or the way you whipped them into shape helped them survive a situation, then it seems to me that you contributed, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I just kind of felt bad that I didn't really get into the thick of it after having been trained all the way through in detail, and then it seemed kind of a waste. But as I say, I have to be grateful I'm still alive.
Being over there in Europe after the war, and seeing, as you described, the way Munich was in rubble. So many cities were destroyed. And here are these people. You're dealing with the prisoners, but I'm sure you saw the civilians too. Did it change your perspective on life and what mattered and what your priorities were to see the aftermath of this war?
Well, I just realized that war is just so dumb. You know, there's no reason for a war. It's just a bunch of people that quit thinking. What a terrible waste of humanity and buildings and all that kind of stuff. So I thought that it was really quite a shame to have so many people, and so many of them were killed. My gosh, what is it, 50 or 60 million Germans were killed, and for what? You know, it just doesn't make a bit of sense, because one guy, Hitler, wants to rule the world. Well, how silly. It just seems so dumb to me.
Do you take pride in being part of that generation, and you yourself are a World War II veteran, and knowing all the guys that you trained with, that you served with, knowing that you defeated that man that you were just talking about and the plan that he had?
Oh yeah, sure. And of course, it was right after the Depression. The guys were pretty tough kind of guys, and they were not used to the easy life. They were used to the tough life. So They were really a heck of a bunch of guys, and they did a wonderful job. I just could have wished that I could have been in there helping them, and I just somehow got lucky all the way through. But I had a lot of respect for the guys that were in the Army. They were really, really good guys.
And then after those 9 months, you got to come back home, and your wife hadn't disappeared on you, huh?
No, she was still up there in Friant with her sisters. So when I was over there, cigarettes were $2 a carton in a PX, and I didn't smoke. One of the very few guys that didn't, but maybe that's why I'm still alive. Anyway, the black market was paying $20 a carton, and the Air Corps guys would buy them from us for $20, and they'd take them to Munich and sell them for $60. So, but anyway, the $20 a carton, I made a lot of money there. It also went to Switzerland, and I bought a whole armful of watches for $10 a piece. Sold them for $100 a piece there in Munich. And so I sent all that money home. So that kind of helped us get started.
Yeah, the entrepreneurial spirit was alive and well there. When did you decide that you were going to get into farming?
I enrolled as an engineer, GI Bill, at Cal Berkeley. That was in 1946 and 47. I graduated in 48. Engineers couldn't get a job in those days, but they needed guys in agriculture. I switched to my major to soil science because it fit so well. All the math and the chemistry and the physics and the surveying, all that just fit really well with the major for soils in agriculture. So, gee, I went, took about 19 or 20 units each time, and really went through in a hurry because, boy, I was married. I had to get a job. Right out of college, I started to work for California Patent Corporation, which is the Del Monte brand. They were growing 2,000 acres of asparagus out of Tracy. When I saw the haphazard way they were farming, I thought anybody could make it in farming if these guys can do it. They had winos driving a tractor. They're turning them upside down in the canals. The management was very bad. You either work New Year's Day or Christmas, or you can't have both off. And there was nothing to do that time of the year. And I thought that kind of management was so bad, and that's why I was encouraged to buy land and just go it on my own in Fresno County. Since I had this degree in soil science, knew all about soils, well, I bought alkali land for $45 an acre.
No one else wanted it because they didn't think stuff would grow on it.
Well, nobody else knew what to do with it. But I did, since I had all this education. And so I bought 120 acres to start with, and I treated it with gypsum. And the other farmers would come by and say, geez, look at old George out there. He's putting salt on top of salt. He must be crazy. But they didn't realize the chemistry involved. And so I developed that land and with the cotton and alfalfa. And then started planting almond trees. And so at that time, the almonds harvest was all by hand. They have little wagons out there and canvas and whatnot. And so I bought one of the first shakers and one of the first sweepers. We just went all mechanical.
And you've been out here in Carmel for 30 years. I guess you probably played a lot of golf. You still golfing today?
Still golfing, yeah. Over at the country club there, Monterey Peninsula Country Club.
Any holes in one?
Yeah, I have two holes in one in just this last year.
Just this last year, at age 89, you got two holes in one. Did you ever have any before that?
No, I never had any before that.
How long you been golfing?
Ever since I came over here, it's been 30 years.
So all those years, and you didn't get a hole in one till you were 89.
Yeah, so I finally got a couple of holes in one, and at the country club, they give you a little plaque with a picture of your hole and the whole thing, and so it was kind of fun.
And you've been married now 69 years?
Got married in 1945. And when we thought the war was over for sure, before I was going to go up to Germany.
You know, as someone who aspires to, A, live long enough to say I've been married for 69 years, and B, hope my wife will agree to that plan. What's the secret to maintaining such a happy marriage for that long? I think a lot of people are curious about that these days.
And the secret is just two words, mutual respect. That's all you really need. We have a lot of respect for each other. And we just never had any trouble at all. Of course, it's easy when you have a little sweetheart like I have for a wife. She's such a good mother with all the four kids and all. So we just had a real good life all the way through.
What would you say you're most thankful for or even most proud of?
Well, I don't know. We've just done so many things, developing all the land, and then bought an airplane, and we flew all over the country. She would plan the trips, and I would fly it. So we went all over the United States, down Mexico and Canada, and that was a lot of fun. And then developing the land there. And gee, we started out with just raw land with rattlesnakes and horned toads, and that was about it. And so we started with just raw alkali land, never been farmed, leveled the whole thing and developed it out, and ended up with 480 acres of almond trees.
And you say almond. Did you ever have some battles with the people that pronounce it differently?
Yeah. So some of them say, well, they beat the L out of it and call it almonds. But we always just thought it almonds, kind of like, well, you would think it would be almonds because you say salmon and we say almonds, but it just sounds better to me.
Well, I want to say thank you for serving our country. I know you didn't get to serve the way you wanted to serve, but your service was important, and maybe that's the way it was supposed to be. When I think about what you just shared of how thankful you are for how successful you were able to be in farming and the things that you've enjoyed, how much gratitude does that give you for specifically those 400,000 Americans who died in World War II and everyone, the way this country came together and the fact that World War II did end up the way it did, because otherwise your story would probably be a lot different, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you're not kidding. Yeah, it would be tough if Germany won and we didn't. We'd be speaking German and God knows what. You have to stand back and appreciate all that the guys did to win that war. And I wish I could have helped them a little more, but they got lots of respect for those guys. And so many of them are not here. And also the ones that got maimed, lose an arm and a leg or something, that's a big price to pay. So I got lucky and I didn't have to pay that big a price. But I sure have a lot of respect for the guys that did.
You told us that you learned how to fly, but when's the last time you jumped out of an airplane?
When I was still in the Army there, 1945.
Well, you know, former President Bush celebrated his 90th birthday by jumping out of an airplane. You look like you still might be able to handle it. What do you think?
I could do it, but I don't need that much recognition anymore. He jumped out on somebody's back or something, but you know, when I was jumping there, you come down like a ton of bricks with a small parachute. Now they have these great big ones. They can pull ropes and everything else and just land there standing up. I think I could probably still do it, but I don't need that.
You know, there is another twist in your story that I think our listeners might be interested in. We talked about how you didn't ship out with the 17th or later on with the 82nd or the 101st. And at the very end of the war, if Japan hadn't surrendered when it did, you might have been jumping behind enemy lines on mainland Japan with the 11th Airborne. Maybe yours was one of those lives saved when President Truman gave the go-ahead for that atomic bomb.
Yeah, that's one thing I liked about Truman. He had the courage to drop that bomb. And that saved a lot of American lives and probably even Japanese lives. But I thought that was a really stroke of genius there. And he had the courage to do it. And so I always admired him for that.
After all that, did you ever wonder, hey, maybe somebody really didn't want me to end up in combat?
I don't know. You get superstitious and who was pulling? I didn't know anybody. It would be different if my dad was a major general or something. But I didn't have anybody in my corner. I just got lucky, I guess.
And as you said, you hit the jackpot with your wife of 69 years. Judy is quite the accomplished artist, too, by the way. Her watercolors are all over the walls here in Carmel. We're out of time on the radio, but if you'd like to hear what Judy Dubois remembers about the way these two lovebirds met, you'll hear from her on the full podcast version at hometownheroesradio.com. Don't forget to check out those photos on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and make sure you join us again next time. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you that freedom is not free.